Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Say hello to Blake Bedingfield and discuss some of the upcoming news and notes of the NFL draft. Blake Bedingfield, our scout, spent 19 years as the Titans scout and much more, a director of college scouting, among other titles. He's in studio with us today. Blake, good to see you, man. How are you?
Good to see you.
Man, it's hard to believe that the draft is next week. What's the inside of an NFL facility like this week on the eve of the draft?
This is when it gets fun. This is when it really gets exciting for someone in personnel, and really just outside the personnel department. You know, if you're in marketing, if you're in the other departments, you're getting excited too, because you're going to have a brand new group of players that you can now market to the community. So, but as a scout, this is when the meetings happen, and you're kind of getting over that hump. You're into the next week before the draft and the following week. The week of the draft is a totally different than the 2 weeks before. So the 2 weeks before, there's a lot of meetings going on with the coaches and scouts and general manager, personnel directors, a little bit of the pro department as well, looking at what the league has out there still in free agency, but also what we're going to do in the draft.
Also, too, is there a sense of uncertainty among scouts? Because this is also, we're on the eve of scouts losing jobs. I mean, right after the draft, don't they switch over scouting departments some?
That's the one unfortunate part of it. Usually the scouts contracts end in June. So there's a little bit of a turnover part of the business, whether it's personnel, coaching. Coaching usually happens right after the season's over. But the personnel departments, the scouting departments will start to happen right in May. Now, there were very few general manager changes in that January area. So there probably will not be a lot of scout movement, as you would think. Some people may change teams on their own, and that would leave an opening with a spot. But there is a little bit of nervous. If you don't have years on your contract, if you're in the last year, which some teams do, it gets very nervous.
I've always wondered about this. So when the GM takes a new job somewhere else, and normally there's no crossover. You're a GM one time, and that's it. But hypothetically here, let's say a GM wants a scout that's working for another organization. Is there a lot of back and forth behind the scenes that goes on there, or do you need permission? How does it all work?
Both of that. You need permission, but there's a lot of back and forth that goes under the table. If I get a job, I'm gonna set you up. But then you have to clear space. So once you get to know the scouts that are there, and you actually may like them, now you may not have a space for that person that you had worked with 4 or 5 years. So it's you have to earn your keep, so to speak, with the new general manager. You have to kind of prove your worth to the organization and him, because, you know, if you're a new general manager outside of maybe the Mike Mayocks that came from TV, you've worked in this business for a long time, and you have a big group of whether it's friends or colleagues that you've admired from afar and you may want to work with in the future.
Did you know a scout from every team across the league, just in dealings with them at different events and games and everything else?
No question. The scouting community is like a big fraternity, to be honest with you. You work together when you go to schools, and whether it's a pro day visit that's happening right now, or when you're in the fall and you're going to an on-campus visit, you will most likely, at a big school especially, you're going to be with a group of scouts, maybe 4 or 5 scouts with different teams at every visit you go to. So you get used to the same faces, and you're really doing the same job. You just happen to have a different logo on your golf shirt or hat that you're wearing for a different team, but we're all doing the same job. We kind of work together in terms of going to see coaches at the same times. Now, there are times you'll split off and maybe go see a position coach that you have a really good relationship and not share that with the other team, because he may be able to provide very valuable information that you don't want to share with a competitor.
Is it possible for a failed pick at one position to kind of impact how a team looks at that position group from a school? Does Kevin Dodd have a bearing on how the Titans will now look at those guys on the front from Clemson? And he's not the only failed front guy from Clemson, right? You got a guy up in Buffalo who's had a similar route, maybe not quite as bad as Dodd.
I think that's a two-part question. So the first part of that, will it affect the way you think of a player from that school? It can, yes, especially at a certain position if there's been a number of failures. And then you have to go back as a scout or a director or a general manager and look, why are we failing at that level? Because maybe a Shaq Lawson, the player from Buffalo you brought up, or a Kevin Dodd, go back and read the reports. Go back and really dive into what you thought about those players. What was the front four of that group so dynamic, so talented, that they were easily making plays? Find out not only why you have success picking players, but why you don't. I think that's a big part of the self-evaluation that you do in the summer as a director of scouting or general manager. I think that's very important. But to answer your question about a Kevin Dodd, sure. You know, especially when you look at is there a similar trait to a Kevin Dodd and a Cleland Farrell that you're talking about? Is there similar production, one-year production, someone that kind of came out of the depths of being a two-deep player and now all of a sudden he's a double-digit sack person? You know, I think that's important to look at and see, are we going to make that same mistake twice? Now, personalities could be different, work ethic could be different, the way they play the game a little bit. But when you're talking about a Cleland Farrell, you have four players, probably five, that are going to get drafted on that defensive line, including him. Even the backup defensive tackle, Huggins, is going to get drafted along with Lawrence and Wilkins and Austin Bryant, the other end on the other side. So you have a very talented group. Why is he winning as a sack? And why is he getting pressure and hurries on the quarterback? Is it one-on-one? Is it his technique? Is it his speed off the edge? Or is he created that pressure because a lot of the double teams are going to the interior players?
And also, like, in that scenario that Paul brought up, I would have to think that if I'm hearing a similar compliment, for lack of a better word, from a coach about Farrell that I heard about Dodd throughout this process, I'm less likely to let it affect me the same way it did 3 years ago. Maybe I'm overanalyzing it to the point where I'm still going to trust my eyes, and I'm sure I would. But am I less likely to trust the information that I get from inside the program because of what happened?
You know, you can be. You know, it depends. I think when you get a player, let's just take a hypothetical player, and you get a player and they say he's a great worker, he's all in, he's, you know, team first, all that. Yeah. And then when you get him and 3 months later, he's none of that. I think that's a concern. Did the money affect him? What other factors, you know, played into that? Or was that his true personality? Now you have to go back and dig a little bit. Find another coach to ask, hey, did I miss something? Should I have come and talked to you instead of the defensive line coach? Because really the coaches are there to sell their players. They really are. You have to, and that's where scouting and really being a veteran scout and having those connections at those schools are so important for them to tear down that wall of promoting their players and wanting players to get drafted, because it looks good as a coach if you have players drafted in the first two rounds every year. But you know what you have to do is you have to find those people that are willing to say, no, hey, look, he was the most talented guy we had on the team at the time, but he had a little bit of a work ethic issue. Money's going to affect him. There are a number of things always that can affect a player once they get to the NFL.
Well, let's get right to the point with what Paul's getting at here. Is Farrell Dodd? And what we don't know is the behind the scenes aspects of all of that. Dodd didn't love football. But on the field, are they comparable?
I think there's comparisons from the standpoint of neither one of them are speed pass rushers. They create pass rush based on their technique, based on their size and length. And a lot of that was because of who was playing on the inside. You know, if you go back and look at Dodd was sat on the bench because of Vic Beasley was starting on the defensive line, who went in the first round the year before. So, you know, there was a reason why he was sitting on the bench. Now, if you go back and look at his sacks, and he was a high sack guy his last year at Clemson, you know, he created a lot of that based on his size and power and length. So there you go with the connection to Farrell. Farrell's a little bit different player. Dodd was a big bone player. I say big bone. He was a 275-pound player easy.
Was Farrell like 260?
Yeah, but Farrell's got a little thinner waist, a little bit more tapered frame than Dodd has. Dodd was thicker down low, so you knew he wasn't ever going to be a bend and speed player. Farrell's got a little bit more bend than Dodd does around the edge. Now, still doesn't have that great speed off the edge, so he has to create it with his length and a little bit more of a power rush. One thing that Dodd did on occasions in flashes, you saw him use his length and size and a power rush, usually the right tackle. He was coming from the left side where Farrell's on the other side. And he could use that power and strength down low. He just never put in the work. He gained weight. He had a foot injury. There was a number of things. And then the, you know, desire and heart just wasn't there as well.
I know you take the context that you have. Is it easier to evaluate a guy who's more by himself or a guy who's surrounded by all this talent, sticking with the Clemson front?
You know, I think it's easier to evaluate a guy by himself because he's going to get a lot of that attention. You know, whether you look at a Harold Landry last year. Now, they did have a good player on the other side, Zach Allen, who's a good player in this draft, but they didn't really have the interior players that are going to demand double teams. So there was going to be any double team. It was going to come on Harold Landry or Allen's side. In this scenario in Clemson, where you have five potential draftable players, they have to pick and choose who they're doubling at the time. And so that's a little bit tougher, a little bit easier for the defensive line to get off the ball because more than likely you're going to probably be in a situation where you're going to get single blocked a lot of times. Otherwise, they're max protecting and they're having a hard time getting the ball downfield anyway.
So we must consider the source, of course, Jason Lockhart.
Oh, no.
But, you know, not everything he says is incorrect.
He's on. The light is on over there. What's going on with this?
Set up. My plans are finally coming to fruition.
Yeah, I was like, I'm looking at Paul. I'm like, I'm on.
Give me a horn.
The light was on.
Give me a horn. The source is
what's
Jason
Rockin
for.
What I was going to ask.
His hit rate is a 20%? Little better than Chris Davis.
Wow.
A little better than Chris Davis. He says that.
About 186.
Don't be surprised to see a third day pick spent on Princeton quarterback John Lovett. The 49ers and the Titans are among the teams to have worked him out. Mike Vrabel has said that there is a chance that they would draft a developmental quarterback. Again, I think it's an incredible luxury. I mean, if you draft a third-day quarterback, you're keeping three quarterbacks on this team now. Now, the reason you would do it is you don't have a quarterback that's under contract for next year right now.
Drafted one last year and didn't keep him.
Yeah. But, I mean, you don't have a quarterback under contract for next year right now, and that's dangerous. Blake, what could we expect for the Titans or anybody that drafts John Lovett from Princeton? And you know I love a nice Ivy League quarterback.
You know, I think if you look to draft John Lovett, you may not keep him at quarterback. This is a 6'2.5", 6'3", 235-pound athlete, and he's a 4'6 player on his pro day. Really good runner. This could be an H-back. This could be what the New Orleans Saints use in Hill, where you kind of use him as a little bit of a joker. He can be in the backfield. He can line up at quarterback, especially in red zone situations. He was actually a pretty productive player this past year. He was out his junior year with a shoulder injury. There's been a few injury issues, but part of that is because he's physical. He's a physical player, especially in the Ivy League. When you're talking about a 235-pound quarterback, he's hard to bring down, and he runs well. So you're talking about an athlete first that will get opportunities at quarterback that could be more of a joker position, which means wild card. He could be anything, whether it's an H-back, QB, a red zone player, special teams player, because he has that toughness factor.
So he'd be active on a game day, and you think you then could spend time developing him as a quarterback?
You could probably do that in a limited role. When I watched him as a quarterback, I didn't see a starter in the NFL. I saw a guy you want to use in multiple spots. So could he be that tight end that plays quarterback? Yeah, he could be. He could be your third guy on game days, but play other roles.
That'd
make more sense.
Is a Nick Fitzgerald in that same mold from Mississippi State?
I actually like Lovett better than I do Fitzgerald. I think Fitzgerald's throwing issues, his mechanics are really poor. He's a good athlete. He's tall. He's long. You know what you?
But I mean, from an athlete standpoint, not necessarily playing him at quarterback.
A little bit different. I think Lovett's body frame is more of what you would look at as very similar to what you see in Dawson Knox, who's a tight end at Ole Miss. Very similar body frame, stronger, more compact, wider shoulders, where Fitzgerald should look more like a wide receiver, but he doesn't have the wide receiver type ability. You know, when you go back in the day and you look at Matt Jones, the quarterback at Arkansas, you know, he was a dynamic athlete playing quarterback at Arkansas, but came into the league as a receiver first. He was not going to be a tight end. He was not going to play another position, but he had that athletic frame. Fitzgerald's frame is more like Matt Jones, just lacks the athleticism. But he could be a dual threat type player, meaning, you know, if he has good enough hands, if he can run a route, if he can be a red zone player, he is 6'5". He does have really good height. Can he be an option outside of that? Now, Lovett can, because of his athleticism and size.
In the tight end piece you wrote at my site, you compared you did comparisons for some of the guys. And for Noah Fant, you said Jared Cook. And some of the guys in my 22 were asking me, when he compares a guy to Jared Cook, is that a good thing or a bad thing based on Jared Cook kind of being a journeyman and everything? I said I'm sure he's comparing him to a skill set that has been at its best very good in the league, but I thought I'd give you a chance to kind of expound on that as Jared Cook wasn't all he was cut out to be in his first stop and hasn't really stuck in a place, though he's made great plays at times and had great stretches.
You know, I look at Jared Cook, and we drafted him in the third round. This is really a outstanding athlete with size and length and hands. His hands are probably more on the 6-7 scale than they are a little bit higher, very similar to Fant. Has some issues catching the ball down the field at times, but can high point, can jump, that type of thing, show the athleticism. I thought Jared Cook's had a really nice career for a third round draft choice. Could he have been in this draft been a second round draft choice? I mean, that's where you're seeing a lot of these athletes now go. You know, you're going to see probably the best of Jared Cook this year because he's playing with a premier quarterback in New Orleans. So, you know, this is going to be his best opportunity to really show what his skills are. But I thought Jared last year was really good with the Raiders and kind of was their number one option, especially after Cooper was gone. But Fant is very similar in a lot of ways. Straight line speed, athleticism to jump. Has a little bit of an issue with balls in the air, 50-50 balls at times just because of the hand issue, but there are similarities. But I like Jared. You know, the inconsistencies were there, but you knew that when you drafted him, and that's why you got him in the third round and not the second or first, because, you know, you had a 6'5", 240-pound guy that ran 4.41 and vertical to over 40 inches. So you're talking about an outstanding athlete that you could get in the third round and try to, progress and produce at the time and develop. But, you know, at that time, we had a tight end coach who was a blocker first, and that's what he was trying to teach Jared to do. Jared nowadays is split wide away from the line of scrimmage type tight end, so a little bit different scenario.
Is Fant a legit top 10 talent?
I don't think he's a top 10 talent. No, I think he's a really good player. I think he's, you know, when you talk about a top 10 talent, I'm talking about a difference maker in every aspect. And that doesn't hold true to every draft. And in this draft, you're going to see you're going to see a player in the top 10 that's not necessarily a top 10 player just because of the nature of the first round. I think there's some solid players, just not that special group. There are some special players, but they're going to be more in that top 5 range. But I think Fant would take a backseat to his teammate at Iowa and Hockenson as the overall number one tight end. Because I like
you prefer Hockenson over
I do. I think Hockenson is more of a combination blocker and receiver. Has really good athleticism, smoother, better hands, just real young. You know, this is a player that still is going to develop his frame and body. This is a guy that's going to be on the rise as a Travis Kelce type player.
Okay. That's a high ceiling.
Yeah, Travis Kelce was not a high pick. You know, Travis was, a third round, if I'm not mistaken, third round pick that ran in the 4.5s at Cincinnati, had some issues just with consistency coming out, but a really good athlete. You can see the traits, see the ability, had some issues, you know, kind of with his personality and work ethic and that, but that's gone away in the NFL. He's really produced and been a Pro Bowl.
How difficult is it, Blake, in the room, not necessarily even on draft day, just in the debates that are going on a week like this week, comparing Hockenson and Fant with, I'm sure there are scouts who say Fant is the more athletic, the bigger playmaking type receiver, tight end mold that we need versus the more complete tight end in Hockenson. How is that debate going, and is it easier to make the debate in today's NFL for a player like Noah Fant than it is TJ Hockenson?
You know, I think it may not be easier, maybe harder. It's what you want from a offensive scheme. You know, it's do you want somebody that's going to be attached to the line of scrimmage, that's going to have to block on the interior, going to have to dig out a defensive end or a linebacker, or is he going to be split out and he's going to be more of a big wide receiver or a big slot? And I think it all depends on the offensive system. So there are going to be teams that value Fant more, but look at Hockenson and say, you know, this is a guy that if we develop. Now, it's always a caution flag when I was director of scouting, when a scout said this player needs to be developed, because my first question is, do we have the coaching staff to develop him?
And how much time does this coaching staff have?
No question. And if you're in a situation where, you know, maybe not the Titans, but other teams where you're on your last year, you know, and maybe the tight end coach is, we're going to give him one more year and see what he can do. Maybe that's not the player you want for him. Fant's a little bit more developed. He is what he is. He's not really going to get, his ceiling is still there. He still has a ceiling because of the athleticism, but he's shown it over a little bit longer portion of his career. But TJ is one of those players that just has a higher ceiling. I don't think his floor is low either. I think his floor is pretty high as well. So I think he's more of a fully developed, or can be a fully developed dual tight end. But I think that that conversation happens in the draft rooms. It should happen in the draft room of which one's better for us now, which one's better for us in 2 years. Because you don't want to sit there and take a Fant when Hockenson is going to be a big-time player in 2 to 3 years.
You can read the full report on the tight ends from Blake at paulkoharski.com. 615-737-1045, our number. 737-1045, our number. Blake, let's look beyond just round one of this draft and give us 3, 4, 5 names on day two on Friday that you have as a second or third round pick that you think, you know what, these guys, they're better than where many have them graded in this draft. Maybe they need development, going back to our discussion last segment, but they're going to be solid pros.
You know, I think when you look at the second and third round, you're still looking, especially in the second round, are starters. You need a starter out of that round. You need someone, maybe not the first year, but he can be a end of the first year starter, beginning of the second year starter, depending on your team, if you're a top division team or bottom division team. But the third round is where you start to get a little bit more of the not taking a gamble, so to speak, but taking a chance on a player with athleticism. We had talked about the Travis Kelce's and the Jared Cooks. Those are players that, you know, you take a chance on because you see the athleticism and the potential, and you know, you try to get them to become starters. If they become starters, that's great. Year two, year three. But they're going to have to play an important role. So, you know, you start to look at, let's just stay with that tight end position. I mentioned the name earlier, but the Dawson Knox kid out of Ole Miss, this is a player that had very few receptions at Ole Miss during his career, played a lot of fullback, played a lot of blocker, but this is an athlete. He was a quarterback at BA, undersized, went to Ole Miss, developed, got big, but was always a really good athlete. I know the family, and the family's actually all good athletes. They're all good size, so you knew at some point he would grow. But this is a really good H-back or detached tight end, someone that has speed, someone that's going to be a much better player on the NFL level than he was in college because of the opportunities he's going to get to have the ball in his hands. He's one tight end I really like that I think if he's passed it over his injury issue that he had at the end of December, which it looks like after he ran on pro day, you're talking about a high 4.5, low 4.6 H-back. So Caden Smith is a tight end that I really like at Stanford. More developed. Stanford has put out a long line of tight ends that I think come in the league. They can block, they can catch, they can run routes, and they all have good hands and have the ability versus man and zone. He did not run well at the combine. This is a low 4.9, high 4.8 guy at the combine, but you saw better speed. I saw better speed when I watched him on film. He's one of those players that will come in the league, be a number two tight end right off the bat, and then probably going to develop into a one. I really like Caden Smith as well. You know, there's a couple more that, Jay Sternberger is another player at Texas A&M that is really developing as both a blocker and receiver. He just has a little bit more rounding off. But these are guys that are going to go in that, probably Dawson in the second round, Smith and Sternberger in the third. Smith could actually fall in the fourth just because of the speed factor and the depth at that position. So that's one player that they need to take a look at. Jazz Ferguson, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you about Sternberger. How much was he asked to block in that Jimbo Fisher offense this past year?
You know, at times, he was actually asked a little bit more than you think. He was on the line of scrimmage at times, blocking on defensive ends, blocking on linebackers. He was someone that was also detached away from the line of scrimmage as well. But, you know, he was someone that I think he still needs developing as a blocker, which a lot of these guys are going to say that a lot about these tight ends. Unless they're asked to really be in a pro set offense, like Stanford runs a lot of times, and that's why Caden Smith is such a valuable piece. But and Iowa, another example of what we talked about, they're on the line of scrimmage a lot, not just big wide receivers. So that's something that he's going to have to develop, but that's something he has to do because he's not dynamic enough as a receiver just to be that alone. You know, on the outside linebacker spot, and I'm staying in that position, you know, you look at the outside linebacker, Jazz Ferguson is a player that has very good production in his career, has won a lot on a lower level of play versus tackles who he can bull rush and use his power and strength with a little bit of combination of speed as well. And he's been a very productive player over his career. You know, Chase Winovich.
SAU?
What's I'm sorry?
Where's he from?
He's a La Tech, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And you look at Chase Winovich is a Michigan player, high motor, pass rusher, little bit undersized, but plays with that high motor that you want to see at that position. DeAndre Walker's another outside linebacker at Georgia, had his hand down a lot of times, played on a very talented group, but always played with very good tempo, effort, pass rush ability.
Is Walker a second round type guy, or is he below that?
I think he's a second to third round. I think he's going to be on that second day. I think that's where he's probably going to fall. I like his size. I like his strength. He's got a little bit of speed around the edge, but he's got power enough to play. He could be a 43 player as well as a 34 defense player.
Let's go to Ed up on line one. First to call in today for Blake Bettingfield. What's up, Ed?
Hey guys, Blake, you really enjoy the segment. First of all, I've got a player that's probably going to be a third day or free agent. I would term him a poor man's Hollywood Brown. He's a FCS All-American out of Stanford. His name is Kelvin McKnight. And I looked at some of the numbers on him, and one of the numbers that jumped out was his play against Florida State. This kid had 14 receptions for 215 yards against Florida State, and he also returns punts. So is that the type of player that the Titans might take on a third day or take a flyer on a free agent?
You know, I think it's when you talk about a player like that and you talk about that second trait, that ability to be a returner as well as being a receiver, that's what's going to get him drafted. That is what's going to separate him. If he can be a frontline returner, not a secondary returner, but a frontline returner, where that's a value player to have as a fifth receiver on a roster, as well as being a punt and kick returner in this league. You know, I see him being a late round draft choice if he's drafted. If he's not drafted, he's going to be one of those priority free agents because of the dual value of the player.
Blake, let's discuss now some day three prospects on your radar as we just evaluate solid pros and kind of before you get into specific names, give us kind of the outlook on what you're looking for day three draft picks.
And I think maybe you were leaning towards what you think John Robinson was looking for when you were talking before. Set him aside. Give us you.
You know, when you start talking about the day three of the draft, you know, you're talking about players that have to fill a role, whether it's a potential player that you're going to draft. So if you're looking at a fourth round player, you're looking at a player that can play a special teams role, but also develop into usually a two deep player. If you get a starter out of a fourth round pick, that's a very good player or a very good pick to have. Fifth round pick, you're looking at more of traits. Okay. Where are our needs? Where is a player like, if you look at this team this year with the Titans, you know, you lose some veteran players like a Will Compton. At some point, you start to have to fill that position, but also look to fill Wesley Woodard's position as well. So if you have a really good inside linebacker that may have fallen in the draft because of some of the depth of the other positions, and, you know, you could get a player that could potentially be a starter, or like a Jayon Brown, who played a very good sub-package role and is really developing as a player, that's ideal. In that situation, sixth and seventh round being more of you definitely want a trait there, whether it's a height, weight, speed trait, or someone that can play a role now. So maybe you get a wide receiver that has speed and size and can develop, but also be a gunner and a jammer and a coverage guy on kickoff team. So while he's developing at that other position. So, you know, the different rounds there, this is when scouts should really make their money. In most situations, general managers look at the top 150 players, which may get you through the first four rounds, maybe five, and then scouts really have to have their opinions. This week is very important for them to put those players on the board to get them drafted. You'll see scouts jockeying to move a player up on the draft board to get him drafted in the sixth or seventh round, because not everyone on the draft board is going to get drafted.
Do you like Tyrell Dodson?
I like Tyrell. Tyrell is a player. They had really good talent around him, whether it was the defensive front with Kiki, Daylon Mack. They had some really nice players, but he was always a tackle machine. Now he's a little undersized, mm-hmm. short, but has good enough speed. This is what I'm talking about, that fourth inside linebacker if you're running a 3-4 or a third or fourth middle linebacker. Could even play outside in a 4-3 system. You know, this is a guy that has a nose for the football, so you're seeing special teams traits, straight line speed in that 4-6 range, a little bit undersized, so that's where he's going to make his mark. On that second day of the draft,
who does he compare to?
You know, he's probably one of those that when nobody on this Titan team, but you're talking about the 6 foot, 230 pound, which in that range you're talking about a dime a dozen. But that speed trait is a little bit better than most,
because and you're looking for consistency too.
And you're looking at a guy that's been a highly productive tackle player in his career. So you know he has a nose for the ball. He has instincts.
Any specific names that you would point to on day three?
You know, because of the depth at the defensive line position, a lot of these good defensive linemen that would in normal drafts be drafted in that third round area are going to fall to that fourth and fifth. And if you're patient enough as a team and you wait, you know, you could get a player like a Greg Gaines from Washington, a big nose guard that actually has a little bit of push and athleticism in the pass game. This is not a total washout as a nose tackle. He actually has some power rush, but also has some quickness with his feet. You know, I bring up the player a couple weeks ago from Wisconsin, Olivia Sagapula, another nose guard, a 350-pound nose guard, but actually has some athleticism and the ability to stay on his feet. Can he be that fourth or fifth round pick that plays that 15 to 18 snaps a game at nose tackle, but also be a you know really solid player? That's a player that may get pushed down in the draft because of the depth at that position. So, you know, you're looking at some of these second or third day guys that probably have a second day grade that you're going to get now because of the depth. But Ross Pierce-Brocker is another player that came from Alabama. He was a starter at guard as a freshman, moved to center this last year. So he has that three interior position backup ability, but has potential to be a starter. He's probably a fourth round pick. You know, you have a lot of those interior offensive linemen in this draft. When you talk about the Bradberries and the McCoys and the Jenkins that are going to get drafted in that first, second round range, it's going to push the Pierce-Brockers down a little bit. You know, you continue down that line of the tackles. Dennis Daly is a tackle out of South Carolina, a little bit underdeveloped physically, that has athleticism, can play a left and a right tackle position, but still needs development. So someone that you don't want to come in and start for you right now, but needs to get in the weight room and develop his upper body strength.
We talked a lot about the possibility of that interior player on offense or defense in that night with the 19th pick in the first round. But what I'm hearing from you is that is a position, both offense and defense, where there's going to be a lot of value on that third day. If you decided to go somewhere else to address that in the first round, those guys will still be available?
I think so. I think what you do is you earmark a few players at 19 that you say are difference maker type players, whether it's the Rashawn Gary's or I'd say Jeffrey Simmons. I know he's got the knee injury, but you're talking about different type players. Now, once those players are gone, if Christian Wilkins is your last player at that defensive line range and you say, that's it, that's the cutoff, then we're going to wait in the draft to go to the next value picks, which mm-hmm. may be in the third or fourth round at that position.
Blake Bedingfield, you can read his work at paulkoharski.com. Paul, what's next for Blake at the site?
I think we're going to talk a little process. The final two before the draft, a little bit about process, and then a Titans-specific board that'll kind of be like, here a handful of guys at 19, here a handful of guys at positions of need round by round.
Next Tuesday.
Is that right?
Correct. Yes, that is correct.
Next Tuesday, we will go specifically first round and take a deep dive on a lot of talent with Blake for an hour next Tuesday morning. As Blake has joined us throughout this month, it's been excellent. It always flies by when you're in. Appreciate it.
I enjoy being here. It was fun to follow John Glennon, who's an excellent writer at The Athletic.
Yep.
Good for him.
Well, I mean, we set the ball on the tee for you where we go Preds. You come in after staying up late watching the Preds.
That's right. I did.
And then
barely.
Then you come
Blake
in
was
well,
very excited
well
that he stayed awake. He came in. He's like, did you guys make it? I made it. I made it.
I'm actually wearing a Predator hat today.
What time did the game officially end last night?
Probably
I don't know. I stayed
11:30,
up later.
30, maybe 11:20, somewhere around that. It started about 8:45, not 8:30.
So you were asleep by 11:31?
As soon as that was over, I was Paul, 5 minutes behind.
The game ended at 11:30. Paul was asleep by 10:15.
Yeah, I'd say 11:05.
Well, yeah, so the game ended at 11:30, so, but puts Paul in bed around his normal time of 9:17.
Wasn't that early, but
let's say he saw the first period.